Hello, and welcome to another episode of the IT Coffee Break, where we delve into the world of data once again and uncover the latest trends, best practices, and insights. I'm your host, Anastasia Elisieva, and today we have the privilege of speaking with Petra Kurtoveshi, an expert with over 20 years of experience in data. So, Petra, welcome to the show. And could you please tell us what exactly do you do at EPAM?
Thank you very much for the invitation, Anastasia. So I'm leading the data solution architecture and data technology consulting disciplines in the Central and Eastern European region. Besides that, I'm a data solution architect myself and actively working on our client engagements.
To kick things off, Peter, would you be up for a round of this or that game?
Absolutely.
Okay, the first one, tea or coffee?
It's coffee.
Pickles or paprika?
Paprika, absolutely paprika.
SQL or no SQL?
SQL, I think that's more widespread and more common to work with, but depends on the use case.
Right. Data engineer or data scientist?
Would go with the data engineer because tools are getting such sophisticated that basic data science tasks are capable to be conducted by data engineers as well. Of course, not to hurt the feelings as data scientists, because as in their name, the science part and the algorithm part is possessed by them.
And the last one, Python or R for data analysis?
Python, because of the lot greater flexibility and much more use cases that are possible to be solved with it.
I see, I see. Thank you so much. And with that, we move to our first data question. Could you provide our listeners with an overview of the data practice at EPAM?
Yes, that's a great and broad question that we could probably spend an hour with. Been with EPAM for 10 years, and I had the opportunity to see how the practice has been formed, how the trends disciplines has changed. We started in 2014 with trainings when big data appeared. We called ourselves big data practice that time, with only a handful of people who's been trained in cluster-based distributed data analytics. That was when Hadoop and the open source stack became very popular, and that was the time when, because of open source tools and the vast amount of data generated mainly from mobile phones, internet sources, just demanded that there would be a shift in paradigm from the commodity Oracle, Microsoft, IBM tools, to shift towards more of a knowledge-based and democratized tools-based development. So that time we mainly had engineers whom were capable to solve problems end-to-end, to operate an on-premise environment, and to solve data problems via heavy coding with proprietary algorithms for distributed computing. So shifting quickly towards today, almost 10 years passed, and we have around 14 disciplines. The data space changed a lot. We have integrated platforms in terms of Databricks, Snowflake, Microsoft Fabric. We have a lot of proprietary tools from cloud providers, which are serverless solutions. The main platform for data analytics is now around cloud. And we have a lot more data problems, so to say, with the broader set of more sophisticated and easier to use tool chains that appeared. So we kept data engineering as one of our main disciplines, whereas engineer solves various ETL or ELT problems using mainly cloud providers' is managed serverless tools. We have data analytics engineering. We still need relational databases, SQL. We need business intelligence to get some data, Python-based data processing to prepare for BI. BI tools, which is mainly top one Power BI nowadays, of course, with Tableau and Looker also having some market presence, are handled by BI analysts, which is an important discipline of ours. Data has to be great quality to be processed, so we need data quality engineers whom are testing, quantifying, fixing data quality issues. I already talked about cloud as the main platform, and when we use a set of tools to be connected with each other, when we need to create complex environments, then DevOps has a specialization for data DevOps, whom are pretty well versed in AWS and Azure based data tools, whom are capable to create infrastructure as code with Terraform and Ansible, whom are able to containerize these data services with Kubernetes and Docker, and of course, who knows a lot about CI/CD, Linux, and classic Bash, Python scripting as well. So some business consulting roles capable to consult with the business with in terms of use cases, how data problems have to be solved, are data analytics consultants who can have specialization in data management, data governance, master data management, and the disciplines that I have some leadership roles in the Central and Eastern European geographies is basically data architecture, data architects, and data technology consultants. So these are the roles whom are bridging the business with technology, whom are understanding the business needs, are capable to translate that into IT language, into architecture blueprints, act as a bridge between the engineering team for proper requirements and quality management, driving the development side activities around high quality deliverables in terms of having proper CI/CD quality assurance and such, and of course guiding the client in terms of technology choices in an insanely complex environment of data tools. And last but absolutely not least are the roles around data science, so AI ML engineers, data scientists, MLOps professionals whose main responsibility is to tailor data science algorithms to know cloud-based tools like SageMaker and able to construct new algorithms, able to prepare data sets for machine learning purposes, whom can be specialized in natural language processing or computer vision, or this year's main trend, we might call it hype a bit as well, but actually it's a rightful hype because it's heavily transforming our industry. In the forms of large language models and what we can see with ChatGPT and the use cases around ChatGPT, those all falls into the hands of data scientists and professionals who are in the AI ML domain.
Fascinating. Definitely 14 disciplines, and you managed to give this broad overview very valid. Thank you so much. And I have several questions here. Data of great quality. What does it mean and how do you get it?
It's a great question. Data quality is an often overlooked property or factor in data projects. It's very important because we are basically building products to achieve a leadership in our business or achieve a lead in our business, competitive edge in our business. And we can only achieve this competitive edge if our reports, if our use cases, if our AI ML models are actually providing better quality results than our competitors. But how it can be achieved, how it can be quantified? I mean, first of all, we need to use good quality data sets. And for that, we need to measure what actually data quality means. So we need professionals who are capable to set up various models for data quality measurement. Within these models, we need metrics, we need rules, we need scripts actually that are measuring data quality. We need to tell business what exactly the quality of our data set is, and there's no common standards or scores to that, so we must create and tailor it to our own data sets. We should understand where this data is coming from, how this data is being extracted, what is the number of valid records, what is the ratio of duplicated records. If we see problematic records in terms of quality or rule violations that we define, like fields not containing the values that we are expecting, we need scripts that will clean it. So overall, we need to understand, and when we understood and when we measured, we need to manage data quality. And there are specialized tools and a complete discipline and professionals to achieve such.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And you also mentioned the rightful hype. How does your team leverage these technologies? And what impact have they had during this year on the data practice?
That's a very good question. The technology is pretty new, at least as a widespread and openly available service, mainly provided by Microsoft. So every week, dozens of tools are coming available that are built on top of OpenAI and ChatGPT. Azure just a couple of months ago made the OpenAI APIs available. So I would say that this year is more about experimentation, proof of concepts, understanding how the technology could be used. I mean, everyone has been going on ChatGPT. Everyone has been asking questions, using it for programming. We understand the limitations of it. I think, as with every technology, the media is probably taking more, like communicating more impact than it has at the moment. And as professionals, we understand where there are limitations.
What are the limitations?
Limitations are couple. So sometimes the generated answers look good from the linguistic perspective, but it's not fact-based or not correct. We recognize that mathematical problems are not really generated correctly. Of course, the correctness of the answer depends heavily on learning materials that were available. So Copilot, for example, which had huge code bases analyzed and learned based on GitHub, is working pretty nicely and with good accuracy around Python and HTML-based UIs and such. But for example, specialized data where some tools need XML configuration or a lot of R code are the ones which didn't have enough training materials, therefore are not generated that correctly or probably not as usable as more widespread technologies for now. So I would say that impact is probably not as high as the media hypes, but it will be a lot higher than what we expect in like a 3 to 5 years time frame. So back to the question about how it changes the practice, how it changes day-to-day life for consulting, summarizing huge documents, creating notions around our data, consulting activities are significant and more significant, I think, how it changes programming, how it accelerates programming. So I will never say that it will replace programmers, because I think it's a very effective tool to help and support and generate code a lot faster than by previous development means, doing everything out of by head or using the Stack Overflow and forums and such. But programmers always have to still understand what it generates, have to modify, have to make it more effective, have to change it. So it accelerates, but it doesn't replace, I would say. However, we can have some philosophy sessions about acceleration, what it exactly means, because that means that actually less people will be needed to achieve the same results. And with data tools getting more sophisticated and making access available for people without vast amount of data knowledge, like visual programming interfaces and such, combined with code generation capabilities, I think are pretty heavily changing the way ETL and DLT script should and could be developed. And not just ETL, but basically any type of data problems around Python-based data science algorithms and such, GPT models and the tools getting more sophisticated are heavily influencing the way of working and accelerating the way of working.
What recommendations do you have for professionals who are looking to incorporate AI into their daily work while ensuring ethical practices and breaking down data silos?
Yeah, very good question. And you mentioned ethical AI, which I haven't added to my previous answer about how AI changes day-to-day work, and I think it's a very important aspect. So as I mentioned, this year is about experimentation, about proof of concept, and to this proof of concept, it's a very important factor to understand where AI is sourcing data from and how AI's answers that we are actually clarifying and modifying as we use the prompt with it, are contributed back to the model itself, meaning that how our proprietary and often copyrighted and contractually managed information is leaking. So I would have two recommendations for data professionals about this aspect. One is to follow the new trends and try these new tools. So everyone tried ChatGPT's interface. But as these weekly dozens of tools are coming out, and as Copilot is being integrated to our daily workflow, for example, Power BI will have a feature soon with Copilot implemented, where we can prompt it to build a sales dashboard, and in a matter of seconds, it just builds it by understanding the underlying data sets. Obviously, there will be faults, but this will spare us weeks or 2 weeks of dashboard development activities or portions of these activities. Then there are new tools, AWS Code Whisperer, Tab9, or the well-known GitHub Copilot, that are IDE and code-based tools helping write at the environment. There are actually tools which could be asked to create data quality reports. Old sentiment analysis could be done by just prompt around Azure Synapse using OpenAI APIs. We can also ask in our IDE Copilot tools to analyze CSVs or any type of data inputs, to refactor code, focusing on code quality. So what I'm kind of saying is that there are much broader use cases, and these broader use cases are getting broader from week to week than just prompt-based chat with the models. And some are bringing very novel and very highly accelerated options in our day-to-day life. So follow the trends, experiment with the tools. We have to be on top of what's happening and how these tools are changing day-to-day workflows. But we should mind and deal with the privacy-related questions on how our data could be and how our proprietary information and work could be protected when we are using these tools.
Right, definitely privacy and security matters would arise more and more. However, back to prompting, is there some kind of algorithm you would recommend when prompting?
Depends heavily on the use case. So some of the business use cases are actually using multiple models kicking in at the different stages of the conversation, like one prompt trained or extended with company proprietary information, collecting the information from the user, the second model prompt and extended documents for usage are responsible to create the answer, and the third responsible for creating a summary, for example. So different prompts can lead to different results, and therefore what I'm recommending is that for each of the use cases, it's worth to try multiple prompts, to even distribute the model into multiple parts and use it at the different phases of the conversation. And of course, depends on what time we have, but I would just encourage everyone to not get some faulty results by making conclusions too early. So trying different methods, measuring the success factor of these different methods, extending the models with our proprietary information, all leads to different results. So these models needs fine-tuning, these models needs learning about our environment. And as we learn how it responds, we can still fine-tune it, both with prompts and both with our projects materials that it could use to answer.
Thank you so much. Multiple parts and multiple prompts. I really like that. Switching gears a bit, let's talk about common misconceptions about data. When you talk to colleagues, to friends maybe, do you have some kind of misconceptions you usually face or people ask you? And how do you react to them?
Quite many. So I would say that there are a couple of overlooked factors in data project. First overlooked factor is that everyone kind of thinks that good quality data will be will be available right from the start. And a data scientist or a data engineer's job is to just use it as is. And there are good requirements how to do that. And there's good availability of the data how to do that. So that's actually not really the case. We have to work a lot to create all the connections and to understand the data and to catalog the data, to make the data available, to clean it, to have a good quality set. So all these are time-taking and specialist requiring roles just to create an architecture with good quality data that makes the data available. That's, I would say, an important aspect of the project. Then another misconception is that we can build something very quickly using the data sets without actually dealing with the governance and the management of the data. So when we are dealing with PII data that contains private information, sensitive information, healthcare information, for example, or when it's business critical and contains the business secrets of an organization, then we cannot just really head into a project and deliver a use case super quickly, because that pretty much means that there is a risk around data leakage. And these risks, as we know from GDPR and such, are now heavily regulated and can lead to fines and can lead to even the business stopping because of the public seeing too much problems about sensitive data leaking. So data governance should be a very important high priority aspect of each of these data projects, meaning that we should very heavily understand, document what the data is, where it's coming from, how it's being transformed, how it's being used, who are the responsible to manage this data, who can access this data. There are various techniques to achieve such. We have to thoroughly document in form of a data catalog, in form of a data lineage graph and an ETL catalog how the data is being used. We have to provide a framework for authentication and authorization. We have to monitor and log if each of the data flows are happening. We have to monitor and log who is accessing the data and how. And these are very important aspects of a data project. So it shouldn't really be the case when we just very quickly implement something that might provide useful outputs, but forgetting these facts and important aspects about data governance, about data management.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. It's definitely a very important point. And as you were mentioning projects, so our listeners love real world examples, best practices, use cases, etc. So based on what you could share with us, could you give us some success stories and key practices for executing data projects successfully and according to these governance principles you mentioned?
Yes, sure. We see a lot of demand nowadays for cloud migration or even as cloud had, let's say, a second wave of priority or trend. Let's say in 2017, we see a lot of requests around re-architecting cloud to make it more cost effective, to make it more efficient in terms of architecture. So one trend is reducing maintenance of on-premise or non-managed cloud services into managed cloud solutions, serverless solutions, and creating automated CI/CD pipelines towards these services. For example, we had a financial institution whom we have heavy presence at moved a petabyte scale data validation framework from on-premises relational databases to a completely managed cloud environment on AWS, which proved to be their first serverless solution. So they've outgrown their previous on-premise environment. They paid too high license costs, but they've been still limited with the scale of the data that they could analyze. It was a very important use case for them because their main business model is basically selling stock trading information to their clients, and they needed a tool to validate if the data that they are sending to their customers is of high quality and they don't miss anything. So they needed a tool that has been capable to compare data sets that have been sent out with third-party databases used for data quality validation. So we managed to move this environment to AWS serverless solution, Parquet and S3, working with Athena, having Jupyter notebooks and BI interfaces for end users. And we had various architecture options drawn up, and there's been solutions which, of course, provided better resiliency or better performance that was actually not needed for this use case. However, the monthly costs have been in the hundreds of thousands of dollars ranges, and the solution that we settled with has been in the monthly couple of thousand dollars of operation costs from AWS perspective, and also proved to be such simple that a few data engineers could implement. So this actually served as a great example for the enterprise. They've been heavily utilizing this architecture blueprint of serverless cloud-based solutions. And we also constructed some guidelines on planning for them that make sure that, dependent on the use case, we focus on these cost-effective services, because as I mentioned, there could be hundredfold difference in terms of price for environment dependent on the services that we are using, and we should factor in different functional and non-functional requirements to construct a very, very effective architecture. Other use cases are nowadays around the already mentioned Gen AI questions. A lot of quick POCs are being built with company-specific data sets used to answer different questions, and there's a tendency that level one customer management and customer services representatives are substituted with an AI-based chatbot and can answer on company-specific information. Just to give a very, very simple example, US companies have very complex private health insurance policies, hundreds of pages detailing company-specific packages, and GPT tools prove to be a great first-level support service on answering specific questions about such health insurance policies. These, I would say, that the cloud and cloud re-architecting and managed services type of projects, nowadays sometimes are focusing especially on cost management and cost reduction, are specific problems that we are solving, and the AIML projects that are bringing competitive edge are common projects that need to be solved.
Valuable and cost-effective solutions. Thank you so much for highlighting these business cases. And data is extremely important right now. Still, it's people who drive data. And as data practice at EPAM is pretty big, I wanted to ask you, for those who are aspiring to join a data practice at EPAM, what key skills, qualifications, personal traits do you look for in potential team members?
I would say that, of course, it's dependent on the discipline, what exact personality and requirements are necessary. But to answer in a generic way, I think, as we established that programming is heavily changing to accelerators available in terms of AI tools, making a big change in the industry. I would say that a curious mindset who is open to understand business problems, who is open to translate it into IT requirements, who has a mind to think of what data is needed to solve what type of problems is pretty much essential. So the soft skills around talking to business, understanding business problems, and being capable to provide solutions to specific business problems is I think a very valuable skill. In terms of hard skills, this year is bringing a huge trend in integrated platforms. So instead of one SQL solution that we had in the 90s and 2000s, we transitioned to Hadoop and clusters around 2012. Then we transitioned to a multitude of cloud-based managed services in 2016-17. And now in 2022-2023, we are transitioning into integrated platforms providing end-to-end solutions for data problems. And number one platform is Databricks with Microsoft of just releasing Fabric, which not at the moment, but we expect that it will be a heavy contender for Databricks, and Snowflake winning a lot of enterprise customers. These three platforms, I would say, as priority solutions for data engineering, data architecture. For BI analysts, I think Power BI is the leading tool. But as Copilot is transforming that space as well, I would say that every data professional should be capable to process data with an object-oriented programming language. So good Java background is always welcome. Pretty much I could say that Python became the standard data processing tool with a multitude of modules and libraries available, from Pandas to more data science and NLP and computer vision focused libraries built again in Python. Therefore, Python's being quite valuable and unavoidable in the data space. I would say that it's pretty much a mandatory knowledge nowadays. And besides that, work experience with one of the major clouds is what's heavily mandated, being AWS as the market leader, Azure gaining huge attention nowadays. But if someone is vouching for GCP, then that's also a good bet.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Basically, Python, cloud, and curious mindset. I would say that it's a great combination. And Peter, final question here, rounding our conversation. Why is it good to be a data professional at EPAM? What are career opportunities from entry-level positions to leadership roles?
Yes, so during the last years, data practice have been a top growth domain area within EPAM and within the industry. So we mainly work with Fortune 500 companies, meaning that innovation trends are absolutely represented in our demand. So we get to work with the most modern tool chain, with the current in demand and current trending tools. Therefore, we could keep our knowledge up to date. From 2014, from a few people, we've grown into the range of thousands of people, and this growth continues. And when there's growth within the organization, there is an opportunity for growth for an individual as well. So we have very much in details elaborated options to get into a discipline, to grow within a discipline, and to make transitions in between disciplines. So there's a clear career path, grow within engineering or from engineering, become a technology consultant or from technology consulting, deal more with business consulting. So when there are relevant complex problems to be solved, and there's good demand for this type of professional knowledge, then I would say that it brings a lot of opportunities to the individual as well.
Sounds about right. So as we are at the IT coffee break, how many cups of coffee do you drink throughout a normal working day, as your coffee person will learn at the beginning?
I try to keep it low. So only two, or sometimes a decaf. I try not to get anxious because of a multitude of coffee consumed during a day.
Totally get it. So thank you so much, Peter, for sharing your insights and experience in the world of data. And it's been a great pleasure to have you as a co-host here on our IT Coffee Break show. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
I think the main messages that are trending nowadays, these have been shared. So if I could summarize it, then I would say that due to current trends, no matter of the overall demand in the IT industry, data is quite high priority for organizations, and the use cases that are bringing competitive edge are heavily around data, heavily around AI. So that's a great opportunity to get into this discipline. And we see the trends that have been shared around Python, cloud, Databricks, Microsoft Fabric, Power BI, main technologies that needs to be learned and that has good demand. So because of the interesting interesting use cases, the high demand and exciting challenges to solve. I would heavily recommend this domain and encouraging everyone who is thinking about taking a step in this career to reach out to us for more details on how trainings could be made, what could be a good training and certification plan to get into this domain. And for data professionals, I would recommend to track trends. The trends are probably changing more frequently than in other domains of IT, though we of course know that other domains of IT are also pretty fast. Still in data, we've seen heavy paradigm changes that are reforming the way of working and reforming the way of how we solve problems and even reforming the problems and demand as well. So it's very much worth to follow the trends, the changes, what AI ML is bringing and what integrated platforms are bringing, because we will be capable to solve more complex problems in a simpler and quicker way. So we should also keep up with the changes to be competitive around this area and solve problems effectively.
Exciting time, exciting trends, and exciting tasks. That's pretty much sounds like a data practice, like right now, from what we've discussed today with Petr. And once again, thank you so much, Petr, for being with us. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the IT Coffee Break. Stay tuned for the next episode where some exciting news awaits you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
I appreciate the opportunity. Goodbye.